Welcome to episode 60 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
Unfortunately, we've got no cookie this week, but I'm sure you've just noticed that we've got this amazing new theme tune, which is courtesy of semi-regular guest Martin Fowler, aka Bionic Sheep, and it's awesome, and we love it, and we thank him very much for sorting it out for us this week and just before we started recording this. But anyway. Yeah. We've got newsy things to talk about. We're going to be discussing fandom again, but a particular angle. And we've also got details of this year's Halloween competition at the end of the episode. But news! Okay, so that we've got some chunky pieces of news to talk about in terms of probably Veritool, which may be spouted down the interwebs at each other. But let's start on a positive note. George A. Romero is teaming up with Marvel to make Empire of the Dead comic series, which will be starting in January next year.
A zombie comic, I can't see that being successful.
I know, especially as it's coming from almost like the one of the main founding fathers of contemporary zombie literature. I mean, what could possibly be there that anyone would want to read or look at, you know?
No.
I thought he was going to say, what could possibly go wrong?
Why would I say that? It's...
I'm not entirely sure.
Is it zombie plague? That could go wrong.
That's true.
Or go right, depending on the angle of the... You know.
Mm. Apparently, it will see a new threat. Did you look at the press release a bit more than I did?
Well, I looked at the article, but I don't think it really kind of said much about what the new threat's going to be. I presume it's not anything like, oh, you've got, you know, kind of raiders or, you know, kind of gangs and whatnot, or looters. And I presume it's the new threat is not going to be, like, risk of starvation and whatnot.
Presumably
it'll be something, I would imagine it'll be something biological.
Part of me is hoping that it's going to be some indictment against Tea Party-minded politics. And what would happen in the after events of a sort of zombie apocalypse actually occurring, and what political elements would try to reform society, and in what damaging, horrid manner they would try to do this. After all, it is called Empire of the Dead. Hmm. So
that would be an interesting angle. I was just thinking maybe it's zombies on skateboards.
Zombies on skateboards?
Yeah. That... Just as an answer, you've got running zombies, we've got zombies on skateboards.
Do you know what? I don't think I've ever seen a zombie in a film on rollerblades. I mean, think about it. If you turned whilst wearing something like rollerblades or like really decent skates, they're not going to come off your feet easily.
Yeah, but by the same token, what would probably happen is because your sense of balance would go when you're a zombie. So if you manage to stand up with the skates on when you're a zombie, you'll almost immediately fall over and bash your head
well,
in.
Well, still, where's our crawling zombies with roller skates or rollerblades on their feet, you know, crawling ineffectively commando style across the... Where are they? They're not there, Paul. They're not there. Where are my rollerblade zombies?
I'll tell you what I find quite interesting. Nobody's ever tried to, like, basically, like, stick, like, really, really sticky adhesive to, like, floors and that. So when the zombies come, they just basically stick to the floor.
I remember suggesting that to a friend years ago, and he called me stupid.
I think it sounds like a really good idea.
Just, you know, industrial adhesive, just to have zombie paper.
Because, I mean, if you think
about
it...
You know, put it outside, you know, on the floor and on the walls around, you know, where you're trying to hide out, and there would just be lots of zombies stuck.
Do you know something where I think at least certainly one group of individuals wouldn't be hugely affected in the immediate effects of a zombie outbreak? Imagine if a zombie outbreak started at an ice hockey game in, like, the bleachers or something. But the teams and that obviously on the ice, and bearing in mind they're going to be behind some kind of perspex and stuff anyway, and they've already got body armour on, and they have ice skates, and they have hockey skates, which are so lethal they can cut your neck open. I would think actually one of the safest places you could be in the immediate start of a zombie apocalypse would be an ice hockey rink.
That would be ironic, knowing what I know about ice hockey.
Yes. me too, yeah. Empire of the Dead. I probably will look at it, because bear in mind Marvel aren't in my bad books at the moment, and I like George A. Romero stuff.
They're in my bad books because Thor exists.
I know, but there's nothing we can do about that. I mean, he existed before you were born, I assume. So, you know.
Yeah, but
there's nothing we can do, man. There's nothing we can do.
They didn't have to make films of it.
Oh, but you know what? That wonderful Chris Hemsworth is absolutely lovely in Rush.
Is he?
Yeah. But at the same time, though, due to my inability to recognise people's faces, when I finally went to see Rush last week, I didn't realise it was Chris Hemsworth until after the film.
Is he the bloke who plays Thor?
Yes.
Okay.
The blonde one.
I really don't know how you do it. I don't even have to be watching a film. I could be like, hold on, that guy from that was the same guy as that from that. Like, I did it. It happened the other day when I actually connected two and two together, and I believe the guy who plays the governor in The Walking Dead is the same guy that played the next Doctor in the next Doctor episode of the special kind of thing.
Yes,
it's the same actor. And I wasn't watching either show.
It happened to me. We were watching an episode of Archer on Netflix.
Mm.
And they go into the sort of, you know, rural south for reasons. And there's a sheriff.
Okay.
And as soon as he opened his mouth, I thought, that's Blucky You Please Merle in Walking Dead. So, yeah, that's something that will often happen to me. I'll be watching something, even if I'm just listening to it, and then I go, is that what's their face? I go, IMDb, right. Yeah.
Does that mean that you didn't realise that the guy that plays Merle in The Walking Dead is also the father of the guy in of the girl in Mallrats? That the show
I didn't realise that. But now that you mention it, and I try to, and it's really hard for me mentally bring up their images in my head, I realise that the two do in fact belong to the same person. So, you know, but so, people
was he wearing a sort of leather vest in Mallrats?
No, but at one point he was like doing kung fu type stuff in
the nude.
Originally in, kind of a bath towel. And then the bath towel fell down and it was in the nude.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think you see anything like that.
I think anyone who knows me in real life and sees me on a regular basis should be thankful for the fact that I am capable of remembering what they look like and who they are.
You know what would have been awesome?
What?
Is if Merle would have found a chocolate-covered pretzel.
That would have been a great reference. But at the same time, yeah. I don't think... certainly where they are now in the series, that a chocolate-covered pretzel pre-outbreak would have survived that long without being eaten by something.
That's fine, because, I mean, he could have found it and be like, ooh, nom 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 nom, and then was like,
really ill.
Sick afterwards.
I'm going to move us on to... Yeah.
Oh, and that one, the Empire of the Dead is coming out January.
I did say January, but yeah. Look out for it next year.
And if it's successful, they could maybe make a TV series.
Okay, so I haven't been able to swing a tweet anywhere this past sort of 5 days about hearing people moan about Grand Theft Auto 5 Online. Or I say Grand Theft Auto 5 Online, Grand Theft Auto Online.
How do you swing a tweet?
It's a very complicated process. And it involves...
Space must be very tight, because after all, a tweet is only short.
Yes, it's 140 characters. You've got to deal with their API, which of course they changed all this year, and it's all hell, to be honest. But anyway, lots of people have been moaning about Grand Theft Auto Online, and perhaps deservedly so, as it's due to the fact that, okay, there's been a high amount of players than expected, but you'd think, with all the money they've made previously... and with all the problems other online-based games have had over the past year when initially launching the services and not having enough resources to meet demand, that while we don't like using this word cloud, maybe they should have invested in some upscaling infrastructure so that they could have quickly shot out, you know, demand from their servers to another service to provide the computational space needed to provide the online service.
That's true, but in their defence, is just about the biggest game launch you could possibly expect.
Yeah, but they knew for several weeks beforehand the potential. This stuff like this is something you can do quite quickly. There's a couple of weeks you can quickly sort out something in somebody's infrastructure or your own to ensure that it isn't all going to go to. Well, I mean, what has happened, basically, where people have had to keep restarting the online mode, been losing characters, items, progress, the lot.
I mean, the problem is, it's just trying to work out the bottlenecks for them, because obviously, they've had the pre-orders and such, so they've known the kind of, load they can expect. And after all, online was launched a few weeks after the game launch itself, but even then, the game launch didn't go 100% smoothly because some of the Rockstar Social Club aspects, like the markets and things like that in the game, as in stock markets, they were being a bit wobbly and being affected by just server load. So they will have been doing their damnedest to work out where the bottlenecks are and sorting that out. But when it comes to something like this, it's like, the whole thing with comparisons with SimCity and online and things like that. Just
My argument is they had the money to think big. That would be my argument. Even before the sale, they had the money to think big. And you consider how much of their budget, when everyone was touting that over $100 million worth figure around before the game launched, the amount of that budget that was spent on marketing, not even coding or infrastructure. And I thought, well, actually, maybe they should have spent a bit less on marketing, considering the word of mouth power this game had, and perhaps making sure they had the infrastructure then necessary. They could have, if it was buying time on some cloud stuff, then that's fine. They could have sold that off to somebody else or whatever. They didn't necessarily have to buy physical servers, would be my point.
Absolutely love to know what was going on behind the scenes at Rockstar with all this, because they must have been testing it within an inch of its life,
I think,
before it went live.
I think once it went live and all these problems came out, I can just imagine there was just this army of system admins going, fuck, and just stressing out completely. And I feel sorry for them, but it's not their fault if there wasn't the infrastructure available, because they're not the ones that are buying all the stuff.
It's just the absolute scale of the game, both from the size of the game and the project that was, and also running this online with servers. I just can't imagine what it would be like.
Do you know what I think would have helped them, perhaps, and I suspect didn't happen enough, was that the amount of data sources available to predict this once the game had launched were perhaps not available to them. For instance, if people had shared data, like actual, not shipping data, but sales data or physical copies in the various territories, and then compared this, obviously, with... is that somebody's phone?
No, that was something else.
Okay.
Wasn't me.
Okay.
I'm worried. I'm
worried now. But anyway, what I'm saying is that you would have known how many games are sold in each of the territories. And obviously, they've only had to deal with PS3 and Xbox 360. Now, if they'd managed to get sales figures for both of those, in all the respective territories that the game...
Which they will have, because a lot of them will be physical copies that they had to produce.
But then what would have been helpful, and would have been a good indicator for them as to how many people, out of all that, would have been going online with the game, is finding out from Sony and Microsoft, the respective users of these games who were online whilst playing the games just generally, like they were signed into their profiles and that, which would have been a rough indicator, given a degree of error, of whether or not they would have gone and played Grand Theft Auto online once it launched.
Yeah.
The data was available, I suspect. It would not necessarily have been shared as much as it could have been, because if you'd known that, you really would have known what to have expected load-wise.
Well, in some ways, I think it's down to... The server load is down to specifically Rockstar, because the amount of functionality. It's like I can't take photos while playing it on the 360 because my account is just silver.
Mm.
And it just says your account doesn't have the, you know, requirements, the permissions. Which is it's bollocks. It's saving a photo to the cloud. That should not need any permissions, but it's fairly obvious that that's, you know, Rockstar's side. The live servers are doing, you know, bugger all there. They're just, you know, signing people in. So,
well, I mean, you say that, but I mean, in the end, I've noticed that Xbox 360, the way that they've been getting people to actually sign up for gold is not just a case of, oh, well, you know, if you go for gold, then, you know, you can play online. It's also using our other stuff like, you know, our on-demand services and whatnot for, like, TV channels. So yeah. I cannot access them because I don't have gold. So I have to go on Emily's account in order to watch stuff on 4OD.
The whole situation with I've said in the past, but with Xbox Live Gold and, you know, what you need it for is bollocks.
Mm.
I'm all in favour of something like PlayStation Plus, where you do actually get the, you know, the games.
Mm.
It's like I recently bought a Vita, and one of the reasons for me buying a Vita when I did was I've been getting Vita games put on my account because I'm signed up to PlayStation Plus, so I already had a collection. So all this thing about the PlayStation 4 is going to require PlayStation Plus for you to, you know, play online. Fine. Because you get things with it. Okay.
I just want to bring this back to the Rockstar issue a minute.
Yeah,
there is one other angle perhaps we haven't considered, and it wouldn't necessarily be their fault. What about the actual connections to these damn servers? As in, like, what if that was the bottleneck? The fibre going to premises?
There's going to be a lot of bottlenecks in a lot of places, and yes. Oh, and also my issue with it, because
I mean, recently, I'm talking. I'm just to clarify. I'm talking fibre to their premises, not the end user.
Well, no.
I'm talking. Yeah.
Because thinking about it, I don't actually know where their servers would be, or whether they have. I would presume, for several reasons, they would probably have several different sites.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
It'd be insane to try and run everything from Dundee.
Hmm.
Or New York, because a load of the team's based over in New York, isn't it?
Okay. GTA 5 had a lot of work done on it, but quite a hell of a lot of the work was Rockstar North.
Okay.
Which is Edinburgh, not Dundee, sorry. But yeah.
Can I just say that I'm a Wii U owner? What's online multiplayer?
I must ask that question as well, because I haven't gone back on Blacklist after finding that I couldn't play multiplayer, having completed the main story.
As a Wii U owner, what's our successful games?
Well, it's just, I'm kind of getting sick of the developers kind of coming along and saying, oh, well, everybody has a multiplayer mode, apart from Wii U, because either A, they want to kind of improve the functionality of the tablet controller instead, or they're basically
which is bollocks,
just
it doesn't need to be there.
Exactly. Or they just can't be asked because there's not enough Wii U owners out there.
There's not enough incentive one way or another. That's a problem. I mean,
but they're happy to port it over to the Wii U in the first place.
Most fantastic example of go on then. But they, you know, one way or another, Nintendo haven't managed to woo enough people.
Have or haven't?
Haven't.
Yeah. Well. I mean, to be fair, though, I'm thinking that a similar thing will happen after the initial launch of the PS4 and Xbox One, because there's just so many games that are coming out on both, next-gen systems as well as current-gen systems. And people are going to be like, well, there's no backwards compatibility, so I'm going to be, you know, buying an Xbox One or a PS4 for a handful of exclusives, probably less than a handful.
I think it will happen to a degree, but nowhere near as much.
Mm. Nowhere near as much as they hope.
You know, the whole thing is bumping up, you know, PC production as well.
Mm.
Yeah, especially with the Steam stuff.
Oh, that Steam Book situation is going to get interesting, I think.
That's a bit mad.
Mad. But beautiful at the same time. Just the audacity of them trying to do it. It's
Well, fair play to them. This is as good a time as any. And also, you know, again, having seen the, you know, the next gen machines, next gen, you know, consoles from the big two, in the flesh, if Valve want to come along with, you know, kick ass PCs at reasonable prices and say, you know, we're going to, you know, say this is our format, and, you know, push that, their stuff will be more powerful, and I'd be inclined to go their way rather than, you know, main consoles.
That I'm slowly leaning that way. I have to do things like sort out getting my hands on a car and stuff in the next year or so, but I'm more inclined to try and buy myself my first proper gaming PC than another console, because for console stuff at the rate, it's like, oh, unless it's coming out, not coming out on PC, there's a good chance, actually, weirdly, that it could be coming out on Wii U. And as long as it's not like a PS4 and Xbox One exclusive, because obviously it'd be coming out on them. And so far, their exclusives are not of genres that I am otherwise inclined towards playing.
So. No, there's nothing which is, oh, damn, I'm going to miss that. I need one of those machines. There's nothing like that for me at the minute.
I can't remember what it was like around the time of the Xbox 360 launch, rather. But what was the situation with promises for things like Mass Effect? Because obviously that didn't launch on launch, but no, was Mass Effect on the horizon?
It was, yes. I remember seeing advanced screens before they had the, you know, official Manship look. I remember seeing, you know, very early screenshots with, you know, as few of the characters and, you know, that alternate Shepard. And thinking, oh, yeah. Because KOTOR was brilliant, Knights of the Old Republic. So, I wanted another RPG and, you know, there was BioWare saying, yes, we're going to be doing a game and it's probably going to be a trilogy and, you know, it's, you know, coming on, you know, 360.
So, yeah. But...
And of course, KOTOR hadn't come out on... you know, PS2 or, you know, anything else. Well, PC. But it was, you know, pretty much it was Xbox and PC. And this was going to be coming out on, you know, Xbox 360 and PC. So there were games and there were things like Oblivion that came out, you know, within a few months. And so did Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, which looked very pretty for its time. So there was stuff there which it's like, oh yeah, definite want.
But it wasn't just that, but there was the odd sort of games like, because Condemned came out near launch, didn't it?
And Condemned, was, looking back, was a damn good launch game.
You know, but there's nothing, as far as I can tell, there's just nothing like that coming out near launch or on launch for either of the two new consoles. And it's just like, well, I was excited more about some of the launch titles for the Wii U.
That's saying something.
It's saying something.
Yeah, I mean, like, Zombie U, and I have, you know, I've completed it and stuff at least once now. It's a bloody marvellous game.
Yeah.
But there's nothing as inspiring for the other two coming out in a similar genre, or obviously in other genres, as I said, I appreciate.
There's two things about Zombie U. One, it could do with a sequel.
But they said they
don't
want to do one.
I know that they said that they don't want to do one because the Wii U hasn't got, you know, big enough install base and whatnot. But in the end, it's going to grow because Nintendo's big hit is actually out, like, at the end of this year and next year. So, you know, Nintendo's Wii U will get a bit more popular, at least. And
A bit, but... Yeah.
Wow.
There are also next generation consoles, and it's like, even though I'm not that favourable towards them, they're going to be a bigger draw than the Wii U.
The second thing that I would say is basically that it was a bit bizarre having the kind of electric based zombies and the spitters and whatnot. If they would have kept to the, you know, just regular kind, I think they could have very easily have, you know, just coped with that.
Yeah, there was some weird subtyping of zombies going on in Zombie U, which was just kind of like, there's no need for this. It isn't House of the Dead or Resident Evil. We don't need the subtyping going on.
Is it the kind of thing that instantly drew negative comparison with Left 4 Dead?
No, because It was not as well implemented as the Left 4 Dead subtypes because it was less rational.
Yeah, that is what I meant though. Mm. As in, you know, well, if this was in Left 4 Dead, it, you know, it would have been, you know, a bit more thought out. But this is just, oh, it's a zombie that's central.
Yeah, it was. Mm. It did seem like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So our next piece of news, I was going to say, would be that there's more 24 coming our way, apparently. In fact, really coming our way, actually. Right smack back down in the southeastern corner of things, in fact. Jack Bauer's coming to London.
Just what our Secret Services need. More ideas.
That is funny that I should mention the Secret Services, because the kind of it's 24- Live Another Day, which kind of sounds like two James Bond films mashed into one,
yes.
Which is Die Another Day and Live and Let Die.
It could have been You Only Live an Only Live Another Day Twice.
That would have been good. That would have been good.
Tomorrow Never Gold.
Yeah.
Apparently, this is going to be airing on Fox in May next year. It's a 12-episode series, which seems to suggest it's doing a bit of sort of filler in between the telly seasons over in the States.
It's either that or it's partly British funded.
I'm
because we can't get over 12 episodes.
I'm currently re-watching season 2 of 24, which I hardly remember from when it was shown on BBC because they messed around with the scheduling so much before losing 24 to Sky, which means that I haven't actually seen any of the other seasons of it. But Netflix is, you know, helping me with this situation. Whilst everyone else has been watching loads of Breaking Bad, I've been watching 24. Find it easier to exercise too, because there's, you know, there's the whole kind of like time thing going on. So I'm like, oh, I've got to get so many kilometres once it gets to that kind of so many minutes into the hour kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
See, what you should do is you should actually turn the exercise bike around and look over your shoulder so it actually looks like and feels like you're, you know, trying to get away.
What from? There's a lot of stuff you wouldn't want to get away from. I suppose in season 2 you want. Don't the kids? Well, how old's the season now? It's about almost 10 years. Is it still spoilers? Hmm. But yeah, so,
I've never seen 24, and I don't really regret that at all.
It has issues with representations of women. There's very few likable female characters in it. Then the others are either, and then the others are like outright evil in the most stereotypical of ways that you can present a woman in terms of being quite deceitful and kind of like the whole kind of Eve stereotype, or complete utter damsels in distress, which is particularly the case of Jack's daughter Kim.
From what I understand, that's her purpose.
Yeah, I know Anita's gone on about video games and stuff. I don't know if she's ever done an episode of anything to do with Kim from 24, but she really should. Because Kim takes, like...
She,
I mean,
she does requests.
It's like Peach in Mario. It's like, it's, you know, it's pretty bad. She doesn't learn her lesson, it seems, most of the time, if really ever. But Kim, it's like she doesn't seem to learn her lesson, and her life is genuinely at risk. Peach, it's like she doesn't learn her lesson, but at least she'll probably survive whatever's going on, because people tend to want her alive, just not necessarily in her castle. But Kim,
that does actually remind me of game theorists kind of take on like the kidnapping of the princess and whatnot, and basically Mario is a stage play. Each game is a stage play, which I can kind of see, actually.
Don't forget, they also theorise that Mario could be a communist.
Yes,
it's a moustache, isn't it?
It was that.
It's several things, but it was obvious that it was kind of tongue in cheek.
It was obvious it was tongue in cheek, but I still took issue with the, like, they acknowledge that he keeps trying to say a princess, which isn't very communist at all. And it's just kind of like, well, no, seriously, if he's helping to uphold a monarchy, that really doesn't make him communist. But anyway, Jack Bauer's coming to London. Now, it does make me wonder what kind of... Because I haven't seen the later seasons, but... So I wouldn't know necessarily precisely what kind of storyline they would try to go for to continue on with the character from those. At the same time, though, this is making a series about counter-terrorism and spying in a post-Snowden and Manning's WikiLeaks world kind of thing.
But it does make me think, because, you know, obviously one of the main things about 24 is the format. It's designed to be basically an entire series is the equivalent of one day, which kind of means that if somebody throws a sickie for one day at work, they're completely out of that season.
That'd be quite funny. But, I mean, just saying, because obviously this is 12 episodes rather than 24, obviously. I mean, they did do a telemovie a few years back, so there's obviously precedent in case anyone's vaguely wondering and is not really caught up with the series for it being shorter. Yeah.
I mean, can it still stay with 24? I mean, is it basically going
to
be...
Well, to be honest, I mean, they do that whole kind of like, it, you know, an hour of episode, which obviously being American airtimes with all the ads is not an hour.
No,
it's... You know, there's...
Well, 40 minutes. Well, the toilet breaks.
Yeah, it's like...
Yeah, I mean, it give them another chance.
Yeah, I think usually for the American stuff, I think it's around 42 minutes.
That's the optimistic time. Yeah. A lot of stuff.
I was about to say it was 42 minutes about 15 or so years ago. And
yeah, true.
It's more like 30-something now.
True, but it's quite interesting. Channel 4, I've noticed, because I've been watching Teachers quite a lot recently, they're usually actually more roughly around 45, 46 minutes. So it's actually quite interesting, the hour shows compared, you know, with the US.
Mind you, our breaks have also increased, but just not as drastically as the Americans.
Yeah.
Really not as anywhere near as drastic. I'm going to move on to...
Although I was going to ask, so Jack Bauer's daughter, is her apartment done up as like a giant fridge?
Well...
Or should it?
It could perhaps be accidentally made into a giant fridge without her realising that she's bought all the components necessary from IKEA to create a giant fridge in which to sleep, eat, bathe, live in.
Are you sure it's a fridge and not some sort of duffel bag?
Are you trying to... I'm trying to think, though, if that's a horrible reference to what happened to that poor bloke from DCHQ the one year. That's mean. That's really mean. That poor bloke from DCHQ.
Well, so's getting fridged.
Yeah, but that happened in real life. This is a proverbial thing happening with some kind of fictional character.
And it's kind of Secret Service, though. To survive a nuclear bomb.
Sorry?
A fridge can be used to survive a nuclear bomb.
Yeah. So it's got its uses.
Yeah,
in the world of Indiana. Okay, last bit of news for this week. Obviously, Pokemon X and Y will be coming out this Saturday on a worldwide release. What's the 12th?
Mm.
Yeah, Saturday's the 12th. Yes, I've just looked at my calendar beside me. I've got my pre-order in. Had it in for a while. I can't remember, as I said previously, which one I'm actually getting, but it's the one with the slightly... to stereotype girlier looking Pokemon. There we go. But anyway, Nintendo are furious because somebody leaked Pokemon X. Copies were shipped to stores too early, and obviously, you know, some game store employee was like, hey, friend, you like Pokemon, here's a copy of Pokemon early. As actually inevitably happens with a lot of games, with a lot of stores, when you think about it.
Gotta ship them all.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, it was really early because obviously this is, you know, a story that's about a week old now, but it's coming out this Saturday, so it is massively early. It's not like by a day or two. This is by a week, if not more.
Yeah, it's a pretty bad leak. Nintendo found out where the leak was, and a rep went to the store responsible. The fan who got the copy early decided to hand it back, so that his friend apparently would be able to keep his job. However, this poker fan, before handing things over, had leaked videos and images from the game onto the internet.
Well, as would happen these days.
Yes. Mm. It's like, oh, I've got like one of the hottest handheld games of the year before everyone else. I know, I'll leak it everywhere. Yeah, it's great.
So, yeah, Nintendo was so furious that they actually sent someone around.
No, no, no. They sent somebody around to make with the chin music, as I keep saying. This phrase isn't going to catch on, is it? I'm not going to be able to, like, revamp a simulacrum of, like, a 1940s gangster phrase. I'm really not, am I?
Chin music?
Yeah.
Chin music, you're punching people in the face.
Oh, I see. Right.
Yeah. I'm not insinuating that Nintendo have heavies and monkey wrenches that go around to, you know, non-discreet retailers who somehow leak copies of games too early. And yeah,
they just nice like
rare Pokemon around. You've got here. It'll be a pity if something would happen to it.
Oh man, I'm looking.
They can see you on the second screen.
Oh,
weird.
It's Iwata's face glaring at you. Mm. What are you doing playing that? It's too early.
I'm looking forward to it. I've been avoiding reviews. I have. Because I think some have come out all sort of like first or preview hands-on and stuff. I'm just like, no, I'm going to play the game. I haven't played a Pokemon game in a while. It's
well,
the first,
I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I've heard that there's something that's super effective.
It's just the fact that it's the first sort of 3D regular Pokemon game, because there's been the sort of slightly RPG ones that came out on the GameCube.
Oh, yeah.
Which didn't have the traditional view, but it's the fact that they finally kind of tried to do something a bit different. I'm not worried about, like, 3D, it's jumping out at me at the screen. I'm just more concerned about not looking down on a world map in a style that Link abandoned a very long time ago.
Well, you say that. I mean, Link to... Was it A Link Between Worlds? That's top down.
Something like that, yeah.
Well, mostly top down.
Yeah, but at least it went and had a whole series of fully fledged three-dimensional polygon-type thing going on. You know, whereas Pokemon has been like top down. Oh, we'll put in some crappy animated effects that look like some kind of flash animation where the Pokemon kind of jumps around a little bit and then like these little bits of fire just kind of shoot towards maybe the other Pokemon it's fighting and that jumps up and down and it looks like a dodgy flash animation, and I've already seen some dodgy flash animations today and I'm really hoping it happened at work. I can't go into details, but yeah. Oh, I'm
damn you, firewall.
I'm hoping that they perhaps up the game a little bit. I'm not talking like full on what happened with some of like say Colosseum whatever, but I am hoping that the game's a little bit better in terms of the dynamics they use for visual style. Meanwhile, I have refused also to look at any copies of the leaked stuff that had made their way online.
Well, you hate spoilers anyway. So.
Yeah, well, mind you, there's not much you can spoil in a Pokemon story normally. Like, it's like they've been so formulaic over the years. You know, it's usually, oh, you start out young as a Pokemon trainer. One day, it's like your 10th birthday or something. Go off into the world, catch some Pokemon, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you meet somebody who's going to be your rival, blah, blah, blah. Oh, can you research some stuff, blah, blah, blah. Oh, look, there's some group having some kind of power struggle, either with another group or perhaps the administration of the area or with you. And that's essentially the Team Rocket-style figures that appear repeatedly in the game. Go get gym badges. Final fight with Elite, blah, blah. Oh, look, who may the final opponent be, blah, blah. And it's just, it's quite formulaic. So I don't expect grand breakthroughs with the narrative, seeing how they, you know, suddenly upped the graphical nature of the game. I can't imagine them spending time on developing a far more thorough narrative.
Can I just say that even though everybody knows me as a bit of a Nintendo fan, I've never really got into Pokemon.
It's probably for the best. You'd probably be left heartbroken and crying in a corner.
I've got into, you know, Mario, I've got into Zelda, I've got into Smash Bros, got into Mario Kart, got into, you know...
Metroid.
Yeah, Metroid. I only got into that.
Sweet Metroid.
Yeah, I only got into that actually in the GameCube era. Even though, you know, I had like a NES and whatnot, I never had an opportunity to pick it up. But yeah.
You're not missing tons, really. I'm gonna move us on to our feature.
Yeah.
Our feature.
Or on Star Fox.
Star Fox. Oh man. So before we wound up the show, I wanted this week to have a big discussion. I say big discussion. I just wanted us to have a discussion about fandoms. Obviously, when we did the 50th episode, 10 episodes ago, we talked about our particular fandoms. And then, interestingly, in the past couple of weeks, I read an article that was on Den of Geek by Simon Brew, which looked at why is it that female-led fandoms or female contingents of fandoms come in for quite some heavy criticism. For actually, when you look at it, no real kind of academic, well, not even academic, just sort of logical, non-Strawman, non-insulting reasons. And this means, obviously, I don't believe I'm going to do this, but the criticism levelled at people liking things, or sorry, people like Justin Bieber, One Direction, and that's obviously, that's music, but to be honest, you know, that there is a lot of criticism levied at the people that like those acts and the acts themselves. And yeah, that there's a particular dimension also that it takes from either obviously the women being considered, basically women, girls, teenagers being considered as idiots for liking it and all that. And then actually the male acts involved here tend to, what's the term I'm trying to look for? They get slurred against, like they get called homophobic, you know, things and such, like for no, even though they're not necessarily gay.
Which I've never worked that out.
Yeah.
Right. Someone has, you know, thousands upon thousands of teenage girls lusting after them. Yeah, obviously they're gay.
But the stupid thing about these criticisms is that, you know, we don't see it with, I don't know, say for example, I like Star Trek. People don't go up to me and say, "You're an idiot for liking Star Trek." They just don't care.
I have had that.
Why is it that we have to kind of turn around and say, no, these things are bad?
But then that's
why can't we just ignore them?
But then that's one angle. The other issue is, say you're a guy liking Star Trek.
Yeah.
Right. Imagine now you're a girl who likes Star Trek.
That's very true. That's very true.
And then it becomes a completely horrific situation where if you do bother to go to conventions, perhaps you're cosplaying as somebody from the original series, Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, whatever. You're clearly a Star Trek fan, and you're female, you're at a convention, a lot of conventions, not necessarily all of them, but quite a bloody few, and your fondness of this show or thing will be called into question.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, if you're a woman, you can't be into anything that's geeky.
But it's the fact that you have to prove that you're part of the fandom, which is kind of weird. We don't do that with, you know, we don't sort of like see some guy dressed up as Picard and go, you know what, I don't believe, because that bald head is not authentic, because of this and because of that on your uniform, I don't believe you're a proper Trekkie.
If only it worked like that.
Nobody says that, yeah, but when it comes to women.
And then going back to this piece that Simon Brew wrote on Den of Geek, it's not obviously just, you know, the music things that happen, like One Direction and Bieber. It's stuff like Twilight, True Blood, Vampire Diaries. Okay, those are all vampiric examples. I get that. That's because that kind of stuff's kind of in for that sort of age group at the moment, and has been for a couple of years.
Quite a few years, count the sort of vampire reboot.
There was a break. Mm. Like, Buffy happened, and to be honest, the girls that really liked Buffy and then may have got into Charmed, that was quite a late 90s, 2001 max kind of thing. And then there was kind of like this gap that kind of happened.
Although, can I point out that in the US especially, things like Buffy will have gone into syndication, which would have been that it probably didn't leave the screens.
Yeah, there's definitely a break over here, though, like a visible...
Oh, well, yeah, but then we're just backward when it comes to TV.
But then stuff like, obviously, like Twilight and that showed up and kind of, like, revitalised the genre. And as I've previously said, stuff like Twilight and True Blood, they have a lot in common with the gothic novel genre back from kind of, like, the turn of the... I can never remember when you say turn of the century, which... Basically, the late 1700s, early 1800s. Like before Charles Dickens. Okay, much before, sort of talking, not Bronte, Austen, Jane Austen, kind of up to about era. There's a lot of the kind of hatred. People think it's new. The kind of hatred that's thrown at Twilight, True Blood, how the characters and stories are kind of like talked down all the time, and the people that like them, which are obviously are predominantly. Girls, young women, you know, it's all very similar. Very, very similar to what was happening, well, 200 years ago. That's what scares me.
Well, I mean, I've noticed a lot of these things generally tend to have similar themes in which the female main character is actually wooed by a powerful but sensitive male figure.
Do you know what happens in a lot of gothic fiction? And actually happens in a lot of fiction for women 200 years ago, generally as well. The stuff that women liked, it doesn't have to be just gothic, you know, there's just general fiction that women liked that predominantly had a female, predominantly as well due to class issues, middle class, upper class readership, the men in society, older women, religious leaders, very, don't like that. It's going to rot their minds and all that kind of thing. And they were quite vocal about it. Mm. And Jane Austen, I'm not sure, it's a while ago since I said this, so, but Jane Austen was one of those people that also criticised this stuff. I don't know for 100% whether or not she ever read something like The Mysteries of Udolpho, which is one thing she particularly criticises in the creation and publication of Northanger Abbey. Which is not a serious Jane Austen novel. This is actually a piece of satire, ladies and gentlemen. More satirical than Sense and Sensibility or Pride and Prejudice combined. Northanger Abbey is proper satire and parody in an actually reasonably short novel. It's one of her shorter novels. And it basically just sends up the gothic genre of the time and just kind of like the books that women were predominantly reading. And actually, if you think about it, because I've read Mysteries of Udolpho and I've read Northanger Abbey, I'm trying to think of a contemporary thing of where somebody's criticised Twilight in another fictional text, but it's clear they've probably never read it or watched the films, because Northanger Abbey by Jane Austen does come across a little bit like maybe she didn't make it to the end of Mysteries of Udolpho. It's a very long novel, a lot longer than any of what she wrote, much longer, you know, so maybe she didn't make it to the end, maybe she never read it.
A lot of, you know, authors, she probably just got distracted by Twitter.
Of course, what the Twitter of 200 years ago, so the gossip columns in the national newspapers... There would have been things. I mean, letter writing would have been big back then, obviously, you know, if you're middle or upper class. So maybe she got distracted writing letters to all her friends and family.
Mr. Darcy.
But on this tangent.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to know, basically, is it okay to slag off fandoms directly? I don't think it really is. I mean, there's a difference between slagging off and criticising.
Critiquing.
So say, for example, people that, you know, turn around and said that Edward and Bella's relationship in Twilight is far more abusive than it actually seems, that's a fairly decent criticism. Turn around and saying, oh, well, you know, Robert Pattinson's gay, you know, Kristen Stewart can't act, they're terrible films because, you know, basically the entire thing's shit. No.
There's not a real argument there.
Exactly.
It's just slagging something off.
Exactly. And I'm sorry, but I feel that as a geek, we owe it to ourselves to actually be better than that.
Yeah, there's a difference between attacking and critiquing, and a lot of people seem to have that confused.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to say that, you know, the entirety of, you know, One Direction which it's all in the pronunciation. That's my preferred pronunciation. Wand erection.
Mm-hmm.
Ugly arseholes who are probably molesters of farm animals. That, you know, that's an attack and it's bollocks. Whereas if I say I think they're tuneless, monotone, you know, shit stains on the music charts, then I think that's a critique.
Apart from the
they haven't done anything I've liked.
But it's all very interesting though, that we'll talk about this now, because obviously, and we're going to see him on Saturday, but Mark Kermode's got a new book out called Hatch Job, which I've started reading in anticipation, and he's talking about film criticism, but generally it could be applied to pretty much criticism for almost any sort of visual-based media, really. And sort of like the way that the internet age has changed the ways and values of critiquing media texts, and kind of like how people kind of either hide behind on
anonymity.
Thank you. And other such things in order to just lambast, because people get more attention if they're negative about things. But then if you praise something that everybody else apparently hates, then you also get in for a lot of trouble as well.
Yeah, so say for example, don't hate me, but I actually quite like Nickelback. I don't understand why people are against them. I mean, they're talking about fucking, you know, having sex most of the time. Most people like that type of thing.
People will quite happily buy those One Direction CDs about that may or may not be about.
I wouldn't quite happily buy them. I'd probably be crying.
Yeah. But it's not just about speaking of Mark Kermode and Twilight. He does stand by the Twilight films, which is kind of, you know, scary in of itself, because it's just kind of like, what, Mark Kermode likes Twilight? And
I always knew he was an American teenage girl.
I've seen him in person, and unless it was a very cleverly designed suit, and I've shook his hand as well, and unless it had a very cleverly designed hand as well, I don't think he's a teenage girl trapped in a very well-detailed and sturdy fat man suit.
Not that fat. I mean, he's...
I was going to say, now you're calling him fat. It just gets worse.
He admits in the book he's overweight.
But... Not fair. I mean, it's like...
But that doesn't matter. You know what? Because that's the kind of thing that he's saying, you know, it's personal text, and that's not proper critiquing of things. Like, if you're going to critique something or a fandom, whatever, that isn't the kind of thing you should be doing anyway.
Well, yeah, I was just thinking there, when, you know, when it comes to fandoms and things like that, and rabid fandoms, it's like, you know, Doctor Who. And Russell T. Davis has his own, in a particular loyal following. And I've seen people, you know, attack him and, you know, his, you know, Doctor Who period, saying that, oh, it's, you know, because he's gay and he had an agenda and, you know, things like that. And saying, no, I don't give a shit about that. I just don't think he was very good at sci-fi. So, you know, I'll critique him for, you know, coming up with mostly, in my opinion, crap. With the occasional, I don't know how he managed that, but, you know, he seems to have, you know, done something good there. But, yeah, it's a little bit annoying that people just will reach for the easiest stick to beat something with, instead of actually just saying it doesn't work because of this and dismantling it.
But I think also part of the problem is that it's not just kind of attacking Twilight that is the problem, or you know, things like Twilight. It's also the fact that people attack the people that like it.
Yeah, which I just don't get. It's like, no, they're fans of something which, you know, isn't a soap.
And then taking this back to the gender issue again, it's if you're female and you like something.
Again, that's the kind of the easiest stick, isn't it? If you're female, then you can't really be a fan.
I mean, I've heard that apparently girls that like Sherlock, as in like the BBC series Sherlock, with you know, Benedict Cumberbatch, they've actually got a name, Cumberbitches, which is just completely mind-boggling.
I think that could well be something they came up with themselves as a...
Take back, you know, the name.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's always iffy when you get the whole kind of like, let's have a derogative term here, and take it back to cool ourselves with it, and then at the same time you're still getting attacked, and then the attackers start using it against you, and then it all goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, there's just so many...
I just want to go back to Komodo a minute. Apparently, I mean, I hadn't looked at the article until sort of researching this episode, but he wrote, was it his last review of the last Twilight film? Or one of the last Twilight films? And he kind of said that basically he liked Twilight more than Star Wars, and then the internet exploded all over the Guardian website.
Excuse me, I'm just going to boggle for a few moments.
It was pretty bad. It was...
If he was talking about episode one, then... Yeah, okay. Good of a point.
But, yeah, apparently he didn't like Luke's... Well, he... The piece was entitled Move Over Luke Skywalker, I'm a Twilight Man, but he's saying in the Hatchet job, actually, that wasn't his choice of title. That was an editorial title.
There are a few times when I've seen things and, you know, the author said, look, that wasn't my idea, it was the editor just plucking something out in that idea.
That, it does happen. It really does happen. But I'm just getting a bit fed up of, like, fandoms me tell, like, it's like, okay, so those people like Justin Bieber dislike Bieber because his music is quite formulaic and unoriginal, and then perhaps dislike him a bit because his attitude as a professional this past year has been shown to be somewhat coloured, and, you know, he's not necessarily the greatest of people to work with. But then One Direction is like, they're just a bunch of lads that sing, again, quite uninspiring, unoriginal music.
They're manufactured, they're designed to be.
Yeah, that, right? So it's just kind of like...
It's not really my place to go, well, they're crap, because I'm not the target audience.
That's the thing, it's like, it's target audiences as well. Like, Twilight wasn't even aimed at me when I originally read it, because I was outside of that young adult sort of age group.
The teen paranormal romance section in the bookshop.
Yeah, but I read
it. Despair.
I read it because I was doing my MA in professional writing at the time, and I was just kind of like, well, I'm doing this MA, there's a load of hype about this, I'm going to read it and just compare it to what I've learnt about novel writing, because I didn't specialise in novel writing anyway. And I was just kind of like, no, this isn't great, there's some serious it was kind of like all kind of like writing structure and plot issues and things like that, and it was just, and characterization issues and pacing, all these kind of, you know, proper sort of like devices, and that it wasn't because it's a love story about a vampire, a human girl, and a Native American werewolf. You know, that wasn't the issue at all for me. That was fine, you know. I dealt with the dodgy romances of the Harry Potter novels. I say dodgy, it's just because they're just far too clean for their own good. At least Twilight kind of has the balls to be a lot more truthful about teenage hormones than Harry Potter ever was. Like, Harry Potter is tame in its dealing of, you know, young relationships amongst young people. And it's just like, yeah. Actually, that's something. I was reading an interview with some male authors, and he's quite popular. I really can't remember his name right now. It's just a blank, but he's done stuff that's aimed at teen boys. It's quite successful. Girls read it as well. But it's like, it's okay for him to show lots and lots of violence in his novels, but as soon as he tries to depict anything resembling actual levels of teen relationships or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that kind of thing is just mental.
Yeah. It's just like, but then this is getting away from the whole fandoms thing. Anyway, so Twilight, there are issues with it, but I certainly wouldn't be so virulent against it. I used to criticise it a bit before I'd read it, and then I was just like, you were like, I got to read it.
Yeah, well, in the end, in my opinion, if you have never experienced, you know, something like Twilight and whatnot, you don't really have a right to criticise it, because you basically just, you know, going off hearsay. So, if you actually watch the films or you read the novels and you don't like it, fair enough. But until you do that, if you do your research, then fair enough. But if you don't, then you're just coming off as a bit of an ass.
I've
seen bits and pieces of the films.
You kind of need to actually watch them.
Yeah, in order to...
three. At least the first one.
I don't know if I could.
If you don't, you'll never be allowed to criticise it again.
But then I've never been...
It's almost like payment.
You were saying...
I was saying I've never been a Tory, but my God, I can criticise them.
You know, I have been Jar Jar Binks for half an hour, and I can tell you, I don't like Jar Jar Binks
that much. Yusa was filled with self-hatred.
I just, oh man, Jar Jar, why?
I mean, it's like, me and Emily don't really like Primeval. Is it Primeval?
Yes, Primeval.
Yeah, Primeval.
That's because it's crap.
Well, it's not just that, but I mean, we have watched a couple of episodes.
So have I, and that's why I think it's
exactly.
Crap.
We don't turn around and say, "Oh no, that looks crap," because I've seen the adverts, and you know, it's just bollocks.
Ditto for something like
Saturday evening TV with dinosaurs. Yeah, go on then. This is awful. Well, some of them have dinosaurs, don't they? And the rest of them just have, what the hell's that? Oh, dear God.
I've got to ask, though, have any of us ever actually been ashamed of our fandoms or been attacked over them?
Oh, now that's a good one.
I don't think I've ever been necessarily attacked.
Verbally or
I've had arguments over... some of them.
Although saying that, being a Nintendo fan, coming up against Retroid, I think sometimes I'm a bit... But there again, you've experienced Nintendo as well, so it's kind of... Yeah,
I have. The only Nintendo machine I don't... Well, obviously, other than stuff like the Virtual Boy, is I don't have a Wii U yet. And that's a very different... I am going to get one.
You are?
Yeah, I am going to get one eventually. It's just prioritizing with everything else. But Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home, which I think is a terrible, terrible film, and yet it seems to be one of the most universally liked of the Star Trek films. And I don't get that.
I'm trying to think of stuff because what about the main lady here? And I like fancy stuff.
Actually, come to think of it,
I've been attacked over.
I've never actually been attacked, but I've never outright said to a lot of people that I like, you know, certain things. Like, say, for example, most people at work don't know that I'm actually quite into sci-fi.
No, they obviously don't listen to the podcast either, so they ain't got no hope in hell of knowing.
No. But, you know, they don't know that I'm into Babylon 5, Star Trek, I'm into Andromeda a bit-ish. You know, all the, most of the Farscape, another one. I haven't actually seen that much of Lex, so I can't really make my mind up about that. But...
You should see the movies, the original movies first.
There's movies of Lex?
Well, TV movies.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they're TV movies, as in they... I can't remember the names now. But yeah, that's how it started off, and then it got regular, seasons.
Okay.
I think the only time I've been seriously criticised for fandoms is how much I used to like Harry Potter in school, and this was before the films got going. So it was, you know, pre the height of Potter popularity. And I really, really liked the novels, and people would criticise me. And as far as I could tell... Because guys, teen guys being guys, not, you know, living up to stereotype and apparently not reading, that meant that obviously any other girl, and yeah, all the other girls in school were being quiet. But, you know, I kind of had on, like, books and stuff, like, quotes from the Harry Potter novels and stuff on it. I remember having the folder I put my designs in for DT, design tech, had, like, a particularly long passage from one of these house sorting poems from one of the books, yeah, that kind of thing. But and I tend to get criticized a lot for that, from both women and men. But meanwhile, the guys running around with their football stuff were absolutely fine.
Oh, that's because football is a perfectly grown up and mature thing, which isn't tribal at all.
All the girls that liked somebody ridiculous, like, I don't know, like NSYNC or Westlife, they were absolutely fine, but the Harry Potter stuff.
One Direction.
Well, this is back when I was in school, there was no One Direction.
Actually,
dear God.
There was one, actually, because my mum used to like Home and Away when it was like on ITV. And obviously, Home and Away was a very different soap at that point because, unlike most other soaps, it had a better balance of good and bad. So happy and sad characters and whatnot. And I did used to like this one actress that was in there. I think it was Isla Fisher.
Mm.
And I did actually basically stick like a couple of her pictures on my DT folder. And yeah, I got probably criticized for that.
Oh, no, I'm just having flashbacks now actually to when I proclaimed also that I liked like Buffy, because Angel wasn't quite out then, so Buffy, the Vampire Slayer stuff, and people were kind of critical of that. Girls or guys.
Oh, actually, this is bringing back memories for me.
Oh, I remember, childhood amnesia has been unlocked.
I remember my next door neighbour like asked me what I was kind of into the one time, and you know, I kind of turned around and said, oh, stuff like Buffy. And he's like, Buffy? He's like, well, what are you into then? It's like, Hollyoaks!
Yeah, for some reason I'm judging far more harshly the Hollyoaks.
The writing of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the film, is far greater than a lot of the writing on Hollyoaks, I'm afraid.
And I'm not saying quite a lot.
Mm.
I will say, in my my teen years, I went around with a Star Trek communicator pin badge on my jacket.
That sounds pretty cool.
Oh, I thought it was pretty cool, but you know, when you're looking back and you're thinking, I wore a lot of denim, as in it was like, you know, like a blue denim jacket and like denim shirt and denim jeans and a Star Trek communicator on it. No such wonder I was a beard magnet.
No, I remember the one time because I have a Griever on a necklace, and I took that into college the one time. And you know, some random guy was like, "Oh my god, you've got a Griever! That's awesome!" You know, he kind of built up a like tiny friendship. We never saw each other that often, but he's like, "Oh yeah, Griever! Like, I've got one as well. Oh, brilliant!"
Meanwhile, when I started playing video games for the first time, and obviously for me that was Pokemon Blue, and I was playing like Pokemon in school in breaks, and I would be sort of criticized by guys. You know, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, or knew, you know, just had a lack of overall knowledge about the Pokemon. I'd actually been reading up on Pokemon before the game had been released, so it was just
Because I mean, I've heard experiences of female games journalist that went to that one place that tried out the you know, a demo, and the guy was basically just kind of treating her as though she doesn't know anything about games.
A games journal has brought his girlfriend along. No.
So I would say there's an issue of like female led stuff, like female targeted stuff tends to get criticized a lot.
Yes.
The heaviest. And then when girls like even just genuinely sort of accepted geek titles, they also then still get criticized. Like, we can't win.
Mm. Which is kind of weird if you think about it, because more and more girls are actually coming into geek culture.
Meanwhile, you know, people are trying to build their ivory towers left, right, and centre. I'm trying to try and bring this back, though, to sort of like Twilight and stuff. I mean, True Blood, I managed to watch
the pilot. Yeah.
I can't remember why we stopped watching it.
I think it was I think it was before we got the TV recorder, and I think it was just the time of day that it was on and the date. I don't know, maybe we were doing something that night, like every week or something like that. But yeah, I mean, it seemed like a very interesting concept, and I know that there's a lot of people that would not think of themselves as geeky that would have watched it as well. So that, you know, there is kind of that sense of, oh, well, it's not proper geek because, you know, these people like it.
But then obviously, like, Doctor Who's considered proper geek, but if you're a girl and you show that you like Doctor Who, the trials that you must go through to be accepted as a fan is insane.
Yeah. So, my missus had a Tom Baker scarf at school.
But to be honest,
that's one of the reasons she's my missus.
One of my main annoyances, though, with guys trying to accept girls liking geeky things is that even if it's stuff they like as well, is the fact that they're meant to have this insane level of knowledge about the friggin' texts in question. Like, you're meant to know all the ins and outs. Like, you're meant to know, like, every bloody episode of Doctor Who that's ever happened. And it's like, is it not enough to just enjoy the concept and to watch that which is more recent? Is that not... Because if that's not enough, then that's just a bit bloody ridiculous.
It's not just that, but it's also assumed that the reason why a girl will be into Doctor Who is because she likes David Tennant or because she likes Matt Smith. It's not about stories, it's because she likes the main actor, like Benedict Cumberbatch. Oh, that's why you're into Sherlock, isn't it?
Although, as an example of the face-palming of, some of you just... not because, they're female, but the fact you had people complaining that Peter Capaldi was too old and they couldn't fancy him.
But did that properly really happen, or was that...
I did see people complaining about that. And not in a, collated way, as in, here are some quotes I have collated. I did see people actually complaining about that, and it was just, you're always going to get arsehats in any fandom, and yeah. I think that was just an example. And it's the kind of thing which is used as fodder just to dismiss whole grafts. It's like, no, not if you've got two X chromosomes instead of an XY, that's not going to be how you look at this thing. I've got male friends who will only watch TV series or films if there's an actress they fancy.
Really?
I don't get that either.
I think I want to round this discussion up a bit. So I think we've learned a couple of things here. One is that if you're actually going to criticise something, and that's criticise, not...
slander, slag off.
Yeah, that's criticise. That means you need to have read, watched, played, whatever it is, to have the right to do this, okay? And then bring up actual, not personal attacks, but actual technical, structural reasons why the text doesn't work.
I'd agree with that.
Okay, the other one, the other thing is that we should, perhaps stop expecting geekdom to be exhibited in specific ways. Like, if a girl likes something, or, a lady, a female of the species likes a particular thing in a particular way. If they like it in a particular way, and it's not the same as the male way, doesn't matter. They like it. The fact that they show some degree of devotion and whatnot, and it may not be in the same way as you show devotion, doesn't make their enjoyment of the product any lesser than your own. Is there anything else we've learnt today? I feel like we should be doing some kind of G.I. Joe style roundup at this point.
Well, there should be a Today's Lessons little jingle bit from the end of episode of He-Man or something.
I think it's just, as Adam Hills would say, why can't everybody just stop being such a dick?
I think I can get behind that. Before I properly round up the episode, I promised you that there's a competition thing happening. Because like last year, we are having a competition around Halloween, which is starting from, hopefully as soon as you've listened and or read the blog post to do with this episode. This year's Halloween competition is being run from Hex Dimension, and we'll be linking to the website for the write-up for this episode. But anyway... the prizes that you could win in this competition are a used, but in good condition, edition of the original Ramiro Dead trilogy with Paul B. and mine's preferred cut of Night of the Living Dead, which is basically this particular additional scene that was filmed in 1991 when the first remake...
Additional two scenes
were filmed during the remake of Night of the Living Dead.
But so, you can watch the original cut.
But you can watch the original cut, but you can also have these extra scenes, which I love. But you can't get that. You couldn't get that in the box set that was released a couple of years ago, around the time that the Dead films were having a bit of a resurgence. And alongside that, you can also win new copies. So we have picked up some new stuff. We're not just giving you all secondhand. We've picked up new copies of the novels, The Shining by Stephen King, and its new sequel, Doctor Sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes, so head on to the page that we'll be linking to in the episode notes in order to enter, and we want you to describe in 200 words or less your main tactic or tactics for surviving a zombie apocalypse. Entries will be done on the episode, well, not the episode, the Hex Dimension post for all this. The competition will be open until midday on Friday the 1st of November, I'll say the year 2013, because you're listening to this a lot long ways. But unfortunately, it is only open to UK residents, and you must be aged 18 or over. This is primarily due to the Trilogy of the Dead having an 18 rating.
Yeah,
that's quite an important part of it.
Yeah, so I would, you know, by entering, you are agreeing that you're over 18, and also that you're based in the UK. I'm afraid we can't afford the postage of any of this stuff to somewhere outside of the UK.
Well, it's not just that.
And also the DVDs in PAL. So, I mean, why any of you Americans would want it? I'm sorry, guys, but you don't want to. You probably got a better cut of it anyway that hasn't been somehow butchered by the PBFC. So count yourselves lucky. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. So it's goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I have a web portfolio website, paul-blurt.com, and I'm also on Twitter as Paul Blurt.
And it's goodnight from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EK6891. You perhaps might want to go by drowning in multimedia.co.uk. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, plus we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to check out hexdimension.com, which A, is where this wonderful competition is going to be, and B, there's cool shizzle going on there all weeks, you know, in order to have some fun stuff to read. And don't forget, we are still looking for additional content creators, including, at the moment, we're particularly interested in people who might be able to write a bit about Magic the Gathering. So if that's your thing, go pitch to us. That is all. Good night.